Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning, Mike Durer with you, and I just got to ask my friend, well, first of all, good morning, Chris Orwell.
Good morning. How you
now,
doing?
Now I'm doing great, but now I got to ask you, what's a wildebeest?
It's a four-legged creature that migrates across Africa.
That's all I need to know.
It's big, and there's millions of them. That's really the key.
And a bunch of them, and they migrate.
And they migrate, yeah. So it is, as it says there, it is absolutely visually stunning. It's a fun movie, because you get to see this migration not only from the ground level but also from aerial shots.
Wow.
And then see why do they migrate. You see the weather issues that are going on, the land issues, what's going on with the countryside, the hazards that they face along the way, it's just kind of a fun travel documentary kind of style film, which these are one of the things that we bring in. We try to bring in science films and also some of these travel films, whether it's China, Egypt, caves, whatever. Yep. So,
yeah, no doubt. Well, I'll tell you what, it sounds interesting. I guess I should know. I watched the video and thought, hey, that
there you go.
Good.
Yep.
I'll capture that. And so, there we go. We got an ad. So, but speaking of traveling, how long do you plan on staying in New Mexico now?
I kind of was joking with the staff. I feel like I've been in Florida more than New Mexico this winter and spring. So, because I was down there for the launch with Steve Bowen. I was down there for a vacation, long pre-planned vacation with my wife visiting two daughters who live down there. And then I just had a son who got a job down there at Naval Air Station Key West.
Right.
And so we were moving he and his spouse down there. So, driving cross country for the last week kind of thing. So, loads of fun. But back, and I'll be back here for a while, Now I can try to catch up.
There you go, and catch up you must. But first of all, before we get into that, you're wearing one of my favorite movie series shirts.
Oh yeah. So
Star Wars.
I've got a Hawaiian shirt on from Star Wars. It's an artist named Shag who's done a number of pieces for Disney, and this is one of the shirts they made out of it. So
that's great.
It's a fun one. Yeah, it's bright and orange, and definitely catches people's attention.
Yeah,
so
purple and white and everything else.
As we're working on all the sci-fi, sci-fact stuff, I wear a ton of that sort of material as well into work, so, and it's just fun.
And it's got my favorite little guy on there, R2-D2.
R2-D2, yep. So, in fact, actually today, R2-D2 is going to be meeting up with one of the actors who is in The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, and Kenobi. So that's another reason why I'm wearing the Star Wars shirt today. So, yep.
Well, the reason why R2-D2 is one of my favorite characters, back in Kansas when I lived there years ago, I was in the JC's up there, and I was a district director in Region 2, District 2. You can guess what my pin I had made up was. R2-D2.
There you go.
It was a lot of fun. People were clamoring, how do I get one of those
pins? Yeah, there you go.
I bought 100 pins. I wound up giving out 1,000 of them across the country.
Yep.
They wanted that pin.
makes sense.
So, it's hilarious. So, but anyway, hey, we got a astronomy meeting coming up tomorrow night.
Yeah, one tomorrow night and then another one on June 8th. And the astronomy group that the museum started up, the Astronomy League, it's been growing, you know. So we're getting, 30, 40 people, at these meetings. And then, that's what we wanted, is people getting more and more interested in this. And it's a neat chance for people who, not only may have, a lot of experience in the astronomy and the telescope world, but also those who, are brand new to it and want to learn more about it. It's a great place for them to come in, get advice, learn a little bit more, with the lectures and the discussions that go on, seeing the equipment. Hopefully soon here, if the rocket park, repairs get done, we'll finally get our new roll-off observatory installed, up there. It's just below where the rocket park is, but above where the parking lot is. So, NASA, and then once we get that in, we'll be able to put some of our larger telescopes that we've got in our collection into that and utilize those for the Astronomy League meetings. So yeah, that's one of the fun new programs that has gotten started up and is doing well.
Yeah, and they just recently hosted a star party.
Yep. So, and there will be more of those, you know. So, there will be daytime events as well as evening events. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, folks want to keep their eye on our Facebook and our website for announcements about that, listen up on the radio, you know, because we'll always put out press releases before we have those, you know, those events going on. So, yeah, lots of fun.
And southern New Mexico seems to be ideal with darkness for star parties.
Well, most of New Mexico is, except for certain areas like right around, you know, Albuquerque and you know, Las Cruces, getting down near El Paso. But most of the rest of the state, even around here, you know, it's just amazing that even here in Alamogordo, especially like up at the museum, if you just go like in back of the museum at night, you can see so much of the night sky, even right next to the city, you know, and you don't have to go that far out of town.
Right.
You know, just where I live there, La Luz, La Bursita Canyon area, dark as can be, night sky perfectly visible. So, and there's some areas here in New Mexico that are considered absolutely primo for night sky viewing because they are so far away from other night lights.
City of Rocks is one.
There's a number of them. The Astronomy League is working on, you know, eventually going to those places, et cetera. Yeah. So.
And I would imagine White Sands National Park is another good one.
Not bad, yeah. So, you know, you've got Holloman right next to it, which has got a lot of light, but you get out amongst the dunes and you can get into, it's pretty good night viewing out there. And just being out on the White Sands at night is just fun. That's the best part of night sky viewing, you know, at White Sands National Park, you know, so is just getting out there amongst the dunes at night, you know, whether it's a full moon event or it's a night sky viewing event.
I got to get it back to one of those star parties. My wife and I, when we first got here, came out to one, and we were just blown away. You know, we were looking at some telescopes, not looking through them, looking at a laptop.
Yep.
You know, and it was
you just project onto a big screen kind of thing. Yep. So
fantastic. Yeah, no doubt about it. That's going to be a great one. So that's tomorrow night.
Yep.
Astronomy League meeting 7 o'clock in the front classroom at the Tombaugh Education Building.
Yep.
Well, you touched on it. Let's talk about it. Rocket Park.
It's continuing. Just continues. They're just finishing up the large retaining wall that's at the front of the Rocket Park, which is where we had a lot of washed away. Mm-hmm. Rock and land right there. So we've had to put in a brand new, very large block retaining wall there. Mm-hmm. So, and then we were hoping as soon as they finished that to be able to move the artifacts back into the Rocket Park. But what has happened is because it's been, you know, the better part of a year since the incident occurred last July, and it took that long for the insurance company to process through and the state to get the payment going and then the work to get started, the two of the retaining walls in the Rocket Park, which were just going to have to be repaired, now have to be replaced. Because there was additional sinkage and damage and cracking, et cetera. And so it had to go back to the insurance company.
Oh, boy.
Yep. So we're waiting on that to happen so that those can be replaced and then we can put the objects back into the Rocket Park. So, not happy about that.
Yeah.
But the work is ongoing. That's about what I'll say there.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's not going to have any impact on the fireworks display.
No. Completely different areas. Yeah. The fireworks display is down the hill, down near where our entry gate is. So, and the, you know, the city. City's all set up and working on getting that going. So, because it really is, you know, once again, it's the city's fireworks show. We host the location for the city to do its fireworks show. So, it's a nice partnership.
Well, and it is a great place to have the fireworks launch from because it's elevated and you get a higher shot here in our area.
So it becomes visible from most everywhere in Alamogordo.
And Holloman Air Force Base.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You can view it from anywhere in the basin.
Yeah, so that is cool.
It's a lot of fun, you know.
And it's a great show.
Yeah. I think the thing that's coming up, though, that we're most excited about, and sadly, what we were originally, you know, we got selected by NASA to do the downlink from the International Space Station. And we were it was scheduled to be during the school year, so it would have already occurred. But typical of anything, you know, so NASA had to delay it due to you know, work going on up at the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. And so it got delayed and not airing until May 30th. So not during the school year. That being said, we did work with four of the local school districts, Alamogordo, Cloudcroft, Hondo, and Ruidoso. Mm-hmm. And so students from each of those school districts, our educators worked with them. We went to the schools and had some fun working with the kids there. And NASA does things very differently now, mm-hmm. Where they videotaped the students asking the questions ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then they videotaped me doing an intro and then an outro. I'm not sure what the word is for that.
That's good. That's good. Intro, outro.
Yeah. So in any case, for it as well. And then that goes to NASA. They do their NASA TV thing with it. And then so on May 30th at 10 o'clock, it's going to air live on NASA TV. So the questions are pre-recorded.
Okay.
But the astronauts' responses from the space station are live at that time. So it's in their work schedule that at 10 o'clock on the on May 30th, they're going to be doing the answering the students' questions live. And anybody can watch it. NASA TV. It will be live on NASA TV, which you don't have to have cable or DirecTV or Dish TV or anything like that. You can also, if you have internet connection, if you have a phone, you just go to the NASA TV app, you go to the NASA TV website, and you can stream it as well. So anybody, and we hope that people from all over town get a chance to watch it, and from all over this area to see the students from this region asking questions to the astronauts and getting their answers. So yeah, and Steve Bowen and Frank Rubio are scheduled to be the two astronauts answering the questions as usual. That's always subject to change depending on what happens up there on the station. So, but yeah, we're very excited about that. We're very excited for this area to get some international exposure on NASA TV. And so, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So we just encourage everybody to tune in on May 30th.
Yeah. Well, I know ever since the space program has been going on, one of the favorite questions is, how do you go to the bathroom in space? So we're not going to go there.
Yeah.
Do you know what some of the questions are that the kids are asking?
Nope. On purpose, the educators know, but I told them not to let me know at all. So I did not want to know. I want to have fun just like everybody else.
There you go.
Seeing it for the first time. So yeah, it was actually a choice on purpose not to know what the questions are. Now, you got it. We did a downlink. Well, was it 5 years ago or 6 years ago? Mm-hmm. It was a while back. I think it was 5 years ago. We did a downlink, and we did it in the pit over at Alamogordo High School. And that was done differently. Pre-pandemic, NASA did the downlinks differently, where literally the students were asking the questions live. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting in the fact that we had done the same thing. We'd worked with the students from the Alamogordo Public Schools District, which was nice this time to be able to spread out and work with schools outside of just the just APS here. In any case, though, but we had worked with the students ahead of time, and normally they say you'll be able to get about X number of questions asked during the time frame of the downlink, and that's it, because the astronauts' time is very valuable.
Right.
And so we had the kids all set up, but we had that many kids, and we had more that just in case things went well, that were on standby, all in a line, and it was all set up, and they went through and they were asking the questions, the astronauts were answering them, and things were just moving along really smoothly. And NASA was interestingly enough so impressed with how smoothly everything was going and the questions that the students were asking that they actually they have a representative on site live as well, and they saw that there was just a few more people of the extras that had and they said, let's go ahead and grant them some extra time.
Yeah.
And so they granted us extra time and went through everybody, not just the ones, but all of the extras as well, that all of the extra students. And so everybody got to ask their questions in the entire group. And we found out afterwards, it's like NASA never does that, So, yeah, so it was a lot of fun. So hopefully this one will be, will be fun as well to see how everything goes, So with the pre-recorded questions, that's a little different. So it will be fun to see how NASA TV produces that. So, because I don't know what the production will look like for that one.
Were these videotaped questions or audio?
Video. So all videotaped questions. So, yeah. It will be interesting to see. Like I said, I've not seen a downlink done like this before, but this is what they started during the pandemic, and they're continuing to do it now. You know, I think they discovered during the pandemic, ooh, this works out really well.
Well, this gives them time to edit, put it all together.
And make sure that, you know, it's polished, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, one of the things that they do, you know, they make sure that everything looks good, you know, so, and runs smoothly as well. So, yeah.
There you go. Oh, that sounds right. And it's going to be May 30th, right?
What's it?
May 30th.
May 30th at 10 a.m. Yeah, right. 10 a.m. local. So, yeah, a lot of fun there. So we got that going. We've also got our normal launch pad lectures on June 2nd on that Friday at 9 a.m. Our curator, Sue Taylor, will be talking about Valentina Tereshkova, the first woman in space. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Women's History Month, you know, so, and it's also the anniversary that month of a couple of Sally Ride and Valentina Tereshkova's first flights into space. So, it's nice to have a chance to celebrate that part of history as well, you know. So we've got, you know, number of those things going on. We've got the exhibits, the writing, and the graphic design for those are ongoing. So, we lost our graphic designer here recently. So we're in the process of rehiring, graphic designer. So
where'd he go?
So he had to resign, so personal reasons, you know, kind of thing. So in any case, though, we're in the search. In fact, actually, I think we're supposed to get our first list of candidates today. So, and start the interview process probably early next week, you know. Yeah. So, and then we can get back on track on the designs for the graphics.
Sorry you lost Alik Arasumi, because he was really good at what he did.
Yeah, he was very enjoyable, enjoyable. So.
All right, sounds good. Well, I guess, you know, we've got that going. What's new inside the museum? Anything new going on there?
Yes, but nothing that the public will necessarily find that exciting.
Okay.
You know, so in other words, when we're working on infrastructure inside the museum, people don't really care.
Right.
As long as the air conditioning works, as long as the bathrooms work, as long as the walls are painted, you know. So a lot of what we're doing right now is painting the walls and getting the carpet repaired, and that, you know, so we're in that phase. We don't really start the exhibits until the summer. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to start seeing the exhibits changing out again as we work on the satellite gallery, the rockets, missiles, and motors gallery, and then hopefully by December, the sci-fi and sci-fact exhibit, the new exhibit there. So, yeah, so that's what will be going on. But right now we're working on the infrastructures. So really it's more of an annoyance.
Yeah.
For people, because we have areas that are roped off.
Yeah.
That, you know, because we're painting the walls there, or we're putting in new carpet here, we're putting in cove base over there. The next thing that we're working on is totally relighting, mm-hmm. The fifth floor and the fourth floor.
Yeah.
So those areas right now that use essentially what I'd call classroom lights. You know, the 2x2 lights in the ceiling are all going to go to spotlights and track lighting, and so that we can highlight objects.
That'd be cool.
Like we have in the human spaceflight gallery. Yeah. So the fifth floor will get that treatment, and the fourth floor as well. So that, in the, you know, probably by the time we next get together, that installation will have started. Yeah. All so right. Yeah, like I said, infrastructure at the moment, not the exciting stuff, you know. But that being said, we are gonna, the new film, by the time we're talking together again next month, Astronaut Ocean to Orbit will have come into the theater as well.
Oh, so that's gonna,
so it's coming in for the beginning. Yeah, it's coming in for the beginning of summer here at the beginning of June. So, yep.
So, all right, cool. Looking forward to that. That'll be a great one. You know, you're talking about the track lighting. You know, the effect of a museum does come down to not just the content, but how it's displayed.
Presented.
The track lighting is one of the greatest things that I've noticed up at the Space Museum, is the way that track lighting focuses all the energy and the light on the object, and not so much a bright light around you, where you can really focus in on that artifact.
You focus on the objects inside the collection. So, and you know, yes, it's required us to close off a lot of the windows, you know, so that we could do that. So, because otherwise, you have all that, you know, New Mexico natural light, you know, coming in through the windows. So we've had to wall off, you know, a bunch of the windows so that we can do that inside the museum. So, and it'll be that way as long as I'm here, you know. So
there you go. Well, I will have to admit that that fifth floor view out across the basin was pretty spectacular.
We're not taking that away. That's still there.
That's still there. Good.
Yep, the fifth floor is there, but the fourth floor and the third floor are gone. You know,
that's just a great photo op and selfie booth now. So.
Yep. But, there you go.
Awesome there and stuff, you know. So, but, you know, just so many things that you've done. Now, you've been traveling all over the place. I know that you have some personal time away.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to recap that you went down to some launches in Florida, too.
Yeah, I actually have been able to see three launches, strangely enough, this winter. One of them, I was invited by Steve Bone, who's going to be doing the downlink, because he's a friend. So I was there for his launch up to the space station. And then I was also, because I happened to be in Florida, happened to be in Cocoa Beach at the time, I got a chance to see a couple of the other SpaceX launches there, Falcon 9s from Cocoa as well. So yeah, it's just, and that's, you know, anybody who gets a chance to go and see a launch should do it.
Yeah.
It's something that we try to recreate it in the museum with our, you know, with the Rocket Rumbler interactive. It's not the same, you know. So being there and seeing that rocket lift off on the pad, especially when there's humans inside of it, is something that is it's a bucket list experience, you know, because it's not the same, you know, the whole concept of the fact that the rocket lights off and you're not able to be close, you know, the minimum you can get is like 3.5 miles if you have the VIP tickets, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, you've been invited there. 3.5 miles is the closest you're going to get. But even there, the rocket will light off and you'll see it. You'll start to see it lift off. You haven't heard anything yet.
Yeah.
You haven't heard anything yet.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a while for the sound to get to you. If you're watching, say, a launch from the Space Center or the Canaveral Space Force Base, where they launch a lot of the Deltas and some of the SpaceX launches and things like that. You know, if you're over there at Cocoa, you're like 11 miles away. There, the thing's way up in the sky, you know, before you'll hear anything. So it's just, you know, that's a part of the experience, you know, the actual physical feeling of the thumping in your chest that you get from the rocket engines lifting off is another thing that just sticks with you as a memory for forever.
Yeah.
The flame trail. That, you know, if you watch it in a video, it looks pretty spectacular, but it's not the same, you know, as seeing it yourself.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it's, if people can, I'd say, yeah, I'd recommend doing it, you know, so if they ever can, because it's a spectacular experience.
I've got a friend that lives down in Florida, Jim Wallace lives down in Orlando, and he's gotten to go to a couple of launches, and he says the same thing.
Yeah.
That you'll see the thing light up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the thing go up.
Yep.
And by the time it's high in the sky, you feel the vibration of the first light up.
Yep.
You know, he said, it is really weird.
Yeah.
You know, he said, but I never get bored with it. As he said, Mike, you should come down sometime when we're doing a launch. I said, I'd like to. He said, yeah, I'll rent you a room. $2,000. I said, that's for an hotel. He said, but I got to put up with you.
Yep, there you go. There you go. Yep. So,
but
the hotel doesn't know you.
The hotel doesn't know me. Jim knows me. So, but yeah, it's fascinating what that all happened. So, well, we're coming into summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Academies or anything?
All our stuff that we're doing this year is out, similar to what we did during spring break. We're going to be doing single day events. We're going to be doing outreach events across the state. We're trying to do a statewide outreach.
Wow.
This summer. And so that's a bigger deal. When the new education director should be on board here very soon. I'll just say that. And then when that individual takes over, we'll probably be announcing all the stuff that we're going to be doing during the summer. So it's, going to be different this year again, but we're trying to do a statewide outreach.
Yeah.
So
now the New Mexico Museum of Space History, that is the only space history museum in New Mexico. Is that right?
No, because if you go over to Las Cruces, there's the Space Murals Museum over there. And also at the Natural History Museum up in Albuquerque, they have a space gallery as well. Because you think about it, you know, a lot of space exploration is the exploration of the planets and the geology of the planets and things. So it's got a very distinct natural history connection as well. So if you, you know, if you think about it, those, you know, those two museums, and then there's a bit of space history also linked into Los Alamos. And so their museums up there have a little bit of it as well in the work that they've done at the History Museum. You know, so, I mean, if you talk about pure space history, us and space murals are really, you know, the two. That deal with that here in the state. But there's a piece of space exploration, you know, in a lot of the other, heck, the Nuclear Museum. Up in Albuquerque as well, has some exhibits to talk about space flight, you know. So yeah, it's at an it's also at a number of other locations. White Sands Missile Range, the museum they have there, which they're working on renovating, et cetera. I think you know that. So that has a little bit of space exploration into it as well, and the work that was done at White Sands.
I think that one has reopened now, just recently.
It has, So I will admit, the last time I was there was about 2 months ago. So it wasn't open at that time.
So they just had a big ribbon cutting and everything. sounds great. Well, I tell you what, a lot of events, a lot of things coming up, and starting off with the Astronomy League tomorrow night. New film coming up pretty soon. Serengeti right now is a great visual effect. Need to see that. And people want to find out more about the New Mexico Museum of Space History. How do we do it?
The website, nmspacemuseum.org, Facebook, any of the social media sites, just look up New Mexico Museum of Space History. And if they need to, just call in at 437-2840.
There you go. Well, you've got your Star Wars shirt on, and you're headed where now?
I'm headed over to our Museum Support Center, meeting up with somebody over there.
There you go. C-3PO wants his shirt back.
There you go.
Hey, Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, as always.
Oh, it's a blast to have you. The fastest half hour. Wow, it is 9:08. So,
yep.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. Talk to you later.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.